You look at Australia as a company, the tough thing is, would I invest in this company? I actually wouldn't, because...
When you're retired, how do you view $3 million from where you sit? What's your view as a money professional?
The tough thing is, as you said, there's inflation. And...
Jeff Wilson is a veteran investor and founder of Wilson Asset Management, which manages $5.8 billion for over 130,000 investors.
Through his Future Generation companies, he's also helped donate more than $87 million to Australian charities.
It's that risk capital that really allows the company to get going and really gives a significantly multiplier effect on the potential growth of that company. It's just bizarre that a government is pushing so hard to do this.
We're such a lucky country with our resources. Do you feel like we're managing things poorly? Like, what's your take?
100% managed poorly. Like, you know, when we...
Welcome to this emergency podcast with the Unemployable Podcast. Today, we have one of Australia's most successful business people and investors, Jeff Wilson from Wilson Asset Management. He's an extraordinary entrepreneur, businessman, and one of those Australians that's actually done some epic things in his life. Today, we talk about this pressing issue of the proposed unrealized capital gains tax on super balances over $3 million and why young people and those people who don't have $3 million in particular are most affected by this. He is not here arguing against it because he's affected as much as what they are, because he's at the point where he can take it. It's a really interesting discussion. I think anybody in Australia that is trying to create wealth and really even just have a better future for their family, maybe not being multimillionaire and rich, but just actually being able to live comfortably in retirement, you need to listen to this podcast. If you do like the podcast, make sure you like, subscribe, and drop a comment below. Who knows? Jeff might answer it directly for you, but engage in the dialogue. Let's lean into this discussion because it matters. He also talks about how to fix the country a little bit as well so that the average Aussie isn't so hard up and under the pressure that we are all feeling so strongly. With that said, let's get into this interview. Like, subscribe, and comment. What's up, guys? Welcome to this very special episode of Unemployable. Today, we are joined by the one and only Jeff Wilson from Wilson Asset Management. Now, for those of you who don't know anything about Jeff, I get the sense he's going to be a very down-to-earth Aussie. Even though he's been extremely successful, he founded his business nearly 30 years ago, has, according to his website, nearly $6 billion in funds under management, and through his philanthropic work, has donated nearly $100 million to charity over the years, which is just an extraordinary career. And we're very privileged to have him with us here on the show today. Jeff, welcome along. Thank you for making the time for us and our unemployable listeners. Great to have you here.
Hey, I'm more excited to be with you than you are with me, potentially. I've spent a bit of time. You talk about my business career, yeah, which sort of goes for 47 odd years. Unfortunately or unfortunately, my early part was, well, I'm not sure if, well, I was unemployable because I couldn't get a job after uni. I couldn't get a job. Anyway, but we can go there a little later if you want.
I got to send a hat to you, mate, because I think you are the definition of unemployable at this point. Like, you really couldn't be put in a box. But, Jeff, I know you've been popping up on TikTok and Instagram and around the podosphere in Australia, as many, experienced good Aussies like yourself who've actually done some stuff and been around the block. And you got a bit of a bee in your bonnet about something that you want to talk about today, and I want to be here to listen, and I know that a lot of Aussies feel the same way, and that is around this unrealized capital gains tax issue. So let's start with that. Like, as somebody who's seen the rise of this great country and so many good things, why is this particular proposal so disappointing to you as an Australian?
To me, yeah, and putting sort of my as an Australian hat on, I mean, one of the great things about Australia is it's all about a fair go, giving someone an opportunity, the land of opportunity, the land of milk and honey, whatever it is. And what really concerns me about some legislation that the current government has got through one house and is going to ram it through the other Senate, probably in July or August, is a tax on unrealized gains. So in theory, it's a tax on a profit, a theoretical profit that you actually may never make. And the reason, I mean, the frustrating thing is, during the election, no one really paid much attention to it because it had been blocked in the Senate twice. David Pocock and Lambie had really stood up for what they believed in and stopped it. With the obviously the Liberal Party that was against it, or the coalition, to stop it go through. No one really paid a great deal of attention because they thought after the election, hey, it's not going to get through again. Now, unfortunately, the Lib or the coalition did a terrible job in the election, and Labor, Albo and Jim Chalmers, they did a great job, and they, to me, on this matter, they did a great job on sort of on gaslighting the Australian public, and the reason why I'm here is because whatever sphere it is that I found you. And Adam, and you were talking about unrealized gains, and so then I wanted to understand I wanted to connect with you and chat about it and effectively why I'm here. Now, how are they gaslighting us? Like everyone knows, since sort of Howard and Costello opened up the floodgates to super, people put a lot of money in super. So there's some superannuation accounts that have far too much money in and are getting a good deal. And everyone knows that shouldn't happen. Like you can, it can happen for a little while, but it's not fair on everyone else. So to me, I think everyone accepts that those people with really big sums in super shouldn't be getting the lower tax rates that everyone else is getting that needs to really build up their amounts in super. So to me, that's a given, and we're not fighting against that at all. And I think where the government sort of gaslighted everyone during the election, they said, "Oh look, this only impacts 0.5% of the population, 50 or 80,000 Australians. Now, they're the ones that pay, will be paying, they've got more than $3 million and they'll be paying more tax on that. The tough thing is, there's $4.2 trillion in our super system. And $1.1 trillion of it is in sort of self-managed super. And now that $1.1 trillion, that actually... is used to invest in startup or small growth companies in Australia. That's risk capital. Now, if you're going to be taxed on a gain that may never happen, then why are you going to put risk capital into that company? Like the Cambers or the WiseTechs or the Atlassians or the Afterpays. Any of those technology companies in Australia, or the AirTrunk, that have done incredibly well. Why put your risk capital in if, when the value goes up, you're going to have to pay tax on it, and you don't have any cash to pay that tax on it? So, and the tough thing is, so it's really going to destroy the startup industry, or the growth technology, small company, support in Australia. It's probably taken us 10 to 20 years to catch up anywhere near to what America is. And now you're bringing in something getting a hammer and just, they're smashing the whole startup industry. So to me, that's one of the big frustrations. And then the other part is it's not indexed. So a 25-year-old nurse, by the time she retires, she'll be paying this tax on a theoretical gain. So to me, it's the whole psyche. When you explain it to anyone, they and say, look, say, people that can understand what a house, how a house works. You bought a house, say it's worth, $500,000. Say it goes up to be worth $1 million, and say and then all of a sudden they're going to come and say you haven't sold the house, but you're going to have to pay tax on that increase in value. It's just, I think I've said a ton Australian. I think Gerry Harvey said it's stupidity of the highest order. Bill Keolty, who ran the unions and worked with Paul Keating, he's come out and said it's bad policy. Like to me, everyone, lots of people in the corporate world have said it's bad policy. A lot of people are getting caught up with thinking, oh, look, it's just, the people that got more than $3 million in their super fund, they want to keep this situation so they get a good tax deal. I actually think people that have got more than $3 million should actually pay a higher tax rate than they're proposing, but actually it should be on realized gains. There's been a lot of tech companies that are going to get caught up with this, a lot of farmers that have sort of put their farms in the structure. I think there's 17,000 farms. Like to me, it's going to be devastating for some people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, it's got problems written all over it for Australians that, for example, a huge. We looked it up recently, and I think the largest percentage of people's super funds is in equities, and followed by real estate. And so, if you're in Tesla stock, for example, and Tesla surges because Elon does something, and you get this unrealized gain, the only way they're going to be able to pay is by selling the stock, and then it could just as easily go the other way, and they get a credit that may never materialize, but you've paid the tax on it, because you're forced to by the government actually. The government is in the driver's seat of your wealth decisions, which I think is deeply wrong. And secondarily, this idea that it loses faith in people's trust in the government because you played by the rules. The rules were set. People delayed their gratification. They said, I will, put off my pleasure and I will save the future so I'm not a burden on the system. And these people did the right thing, most people. And now they're being punished for it. So next time the government comes out with something, how much trust do people have to do that? Which is really sad. What I'd be
And
interested to go ahead.
the younger people, because they're like, hey, I'm well, am I lucky or am I unlucky because I'm old? And so effectively I can take my money out of super, where it's sort of everyone else who's in the super system, that's younger, you're sort of locked in until get to 60 and retire. So to me, it's like changing the rules midstream is incredibly unfair. And I think aspiration, like it's sort of, I was talking to a young 30-year-old who, I think when they're 26, set up their own self-managed super fund, had put as much as they could in each year, and I think they're playing Bitcoin, in a quite a big way, and I think they're up to $300,000. But they said, hey, look, from their perspective, it's the government's broken the social contract, so they'll put what they have to put in of their salary, but they won't top any more up. And the interesting thing is, to me, the interesting thing is, crypto is actually now 1% of all assets in superannuation. But in terms of superannuation funds, I think of younger people, it makes up about 7%. And you look at Bitcoin.
Wow, I didn't know that.
You look at Bitcoin, and each time, I think that drawdowns or when Bitcoin's fallen significantly, it's fallen 4 or 5 times. And each time it falls, it's fallen about 80 odd percent. Even though it ends up hitting new highs. So, but the period it falls tends to be the period after June 30, the 6 months after June 30. So I actually know one, actually middle-aged, sort of advisor that put all his money in Bitcoin, and he's got a lot of money now in his super fund, and he's scared that he just won't be able to pay the tax because if it has a big run and then falls 80% and then he has to sell out, he's effectively selling out at the bottom. Which is like, you shouldn't be put in that position.
No, that's right. Something you did say that I think a lot of people would like to just understand. I mean, you obviously manage money for a living at scale. So when you talk about a nurse who's 25 today, and this is what I keep saying to people, is most people don't understand inflation. The average Aussie doesn't understand. They understand it a little bit. Okay, things go up every year, but they don't really understand how damaging that is and how it's putting everybody on the risk curve. So this nurse who's 25 today, that's through a combination of her salary going up, that super contribution just compounding over time. And you're saying the average person within one generation, this policy will affect most Australians, will be deemed, you know, wealthy by $3 million. Is that, have you done the math on that? Or is that like the AMP report, or like, could you just speak to that quickly?
Yeah. To me, I mean, if you look at, the AMP report, and to me, there was some different assumptions used there. We've used the average salary, and as you said, in one generation, which is 30 years, that on the numbers that we've got, and on that benefit of compounding, if you've got your money in and it keeps growing, and we've, I think, assumed growth of 8 or 9% per annum, which it tends to be asset price growth. 8.1 million Australians within 30 years and 29 years will be above that $3 million. Yeah, if you're a 30 year old now, with an average wage. So, it effectively everyone is going to get done. And if you want to understand how inflation works, I started. Out of uni, I said, I was unemployable for a period of time. I ended up getting a job in 1980, and I was getting paid $10,000 a year. So fortunately, I'm getting paid more than $10,000 a year now. But in terms of the buy, well, actually, let's go back. Well, I mean, it's another discussion, really, house prices. But I think when I bought my first house, my parents sort of encouraged me in my mid-20s. And I paid 2.5 times my annual salary, and that was in a little terrace in Collingwood in a street called Easy Street in St Kilda. In Collingwood.
As a finance professional, I mean, you manage, nearly, according to the website, it might be more now. I'm not sure how old the website info is. It says $5.8 billion. So you know a thing or two about managing money. A lot of young people look at somebody with $3 million and go, they're a multimillionaire, they're rich. But when you're retired, how do you view $3 million from where you sit? Is that like rich in Australia, in your opinion, or is that to live a comfortable life or a really good life? What's your view as a money professional?
Yeah, you've got the $3 million in the bank deposit. You're getting about 4%. Yeah, there's $120,000. It's pre-tax. You pay tax, so it's $95,000, and that's what you live on. The tough thing is, as you said, there's inflation. If inflation's running at 3% or 4%, then each year that amount of money buys you, you've got less and less buying power.
What's it worth in 30 years, right? Like, you can do the math, and ChatGPT will tell you if you put in 4% inflation, get it out. In my estimation, it doesn't make somebody rich.
No. Like, to me, that's sort of what you need. What you need to survive, pretty much.
I would tend to agree, and that's assuming you probably own your home by then. Because if you're still renting in 30 years, what's rent's going to be in 30 years from now? Is 90 grand going to get you anything? Just on rent?
No way. That's right. No way.
So you've got to have paid your house off and accumulated $3 million just to live what I would consider is probably I think in 30 years at 4%, the 90 grand's probably worth, I don't know, 30 or 40 is what you'd be living on. And that's if you own your home. If you don't own your home, you're actually screwed. So this idea that 3 million makes you rich, in my opinion, is just completely misplaced. This is not just two wealthy guys talking. This is actually, you know, reality in this world, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So when you talked about like really big, like you said before, like there's some people with really big amounts in superannuation. Yeah. You know, Peter Thiel in the US is famous for having hundreds of millions in his Roth IRA, which is the similar equivalent of a self-managed super fund. What would you say is like, are you talking about business people who've just pumped heaps of cash in there to you know, for tax effective reasons? I guess what I was getting at is do you consider 3 million really big, or do you consider that like a modest goal?
Well, eventually, the problem is it's like it's capped at that 3 mil. And we all know that governments tend not to tax less. They tend to tax. one of the real concerns about this is, yeah, there's been a real outcry on this. And the reason, how I can compare it, back in 2018, 2019, the then Labor Party had a strategy on franking credits that we thought were very unfair. So we sort of lobbied very hard for a year before that 2019 election, saying, look, this isn't fair. If Labor wins, then it's not going to be great. In the end, Labor didn't win the election. But there were about 1 million people were going to get impacted. And we ran a petition. Now, it took us 5 months to get 17,000 people to sign that petition. After the election, like 3 weeks ago, we started a petition on this, on Frank, on the unrealized gains. And it's been going for 3 weeks. And so you'd say, oh, well, how many people have you got signed up? Probably not many after 3 weeks. Back in franking, it was 1 million people affected. This time, the government talks about 50,000 to 80,000 people are affected. Now, already, we've got over 17,000 people signed up. So that means a lot of people. And the interesting thing is more than half of them don't have self-managed super funds. So to me, there's a surprising amount of awareness, I think, since the election, that this, it's called Division 296, which is effectively taxing an unrealized gain in a super fund, is bad, or is stupid, or is some people say criminal or illogical. And the interesting thing about it is, because it's called Division 296, the tax are going to bring in. They're talking about doing it in super funds with people with balance over $3 million. They can use that Division 296 tax. They can use it for other assets. And the real, I think, concern from people and the fact that the Labor Party's been pushing so hard to get this in, even though there's really been a big backlash since after the election, is people are thinking the conspiracy theory that they want to tax other parts of your wealth.
So the Trojan horse, in other words, is what you're saying is the conspiracy theory. So this petition, where can people sign this petition?
Maybe you put it somewhere down there, don't they?
But can you give me that link? I'd love to put it there.
Please
provide that. So if you're watching this, guys, on YouTube, go to the link below. We're going to post that. Yes. And it's interesting what you said, because, you know, I was surprised. So you said 7% of young people have Bitcoin in their super.
I think it's crypto. They call it crypto. I know there's a big difference.
Yeah, there is. We got to orange pill you, Jeff, and get you to be a Bitcoiner, mate. There's still time.
And way, a few people have been trying to get me that way. And to me, it's a fascinating, I'm interested in it. I'm interested in it.
I'll send you a couple of books.
Well, I know. I've read one of them. What's that one? The guy about my age in the UK.
The Big Print?
Yeah, Big exactly. Print?
Larry Lepard, yeah. I met Larry last week in Prague. Lovely guy.
Well done.
Yeah, legend.
Yeah, it's a what I try to do in life is, you know, is sort of focus on your area of expertise.
Yes,
my area of expertise isn't sort of analyzing Bitcoin. It's sort of analyzing companies that make money. So
counterintuitive for you. It'll be very challenging for you.
But it's a market. And to me, it's sort of understanding, like, I understand gold. Yeah. To me, I understand the logic. I understand the logic for Bitcoin. And I understand for, of course, it's supply and demand. And to me, one of the fantastic things about Bitcoin and crypto, and this is one of the really sad things about what's happening here with superannuation, because you've just got to generate. When I grew up, like, I didn't even know what a stock market was. Yeah, I didn't know what a market was. I didn't know how to take risk. I didn't know markets went up and down. Yeah, but young people today, they understand markets. They understand there's volatility. They understand the volatility can work for you. They understand about taking risk. I would have thought the self-managed super funds, if the government did the right thing, they would just continue to grow significantly. And young Australians would want to put their money in their self-managed super fund, and they would want to make their decisions. Where are they going to put that money? What type of companies do I want to see grow and prosper? But why would you do that now? If the value of those companies goes up, and then you've got to pay tax on it, and you can't sell the shares, because it's unlisted, it's in its early growth phase.
They get these crazy valuations on the way up, and then they never materialize, like in a Series C or a Series D, and then they don't have product market fit or something happens. These are high-risk ventures until they IPO, and even when they do IPO, they're not always guaranteed to go much further. You know, they can fall into zombies after that, you know?
And the great thing about that money in the self-managed super fund is you can't get your hands on it. So you're prepared to take a long-term view. And you're prepared to take, it's not like the dollars that you've paid tax on and you got in your pocket that you really don't want to give to anyone. It's sort of another set of dollars that you've got over there that, I can take a risk on this and maybe I'll take a bit more risk. And it's that risk capital that really allows the company to get going and really gives a significantly multiplier effect on the potential growth of that company. And to me, like, it's just bizarre that a government is pushing so hard to do this, particularly on the other side. They're saying, hey, look, we want to grow productivity. So how do you grow productivity? You have patient capital that's allowed to invest in these exciting, dynamic growth companies. And we've got a group of people that understand markets and understand risk and understand volatility. To me, it frustrates me significantly.
That's a lot of money. Like you said, $1 trillion in that sector in super, which is amazing. And if you're a young person listening to this, you know, as Jeff said, he's fine. He's out now. Like, he can take his money. It's really you guys that are listening. If you've got crypto or these high growth asymmetric bets available to you, I always say to young people, sure, housing is an advantage that you don't have that we did. But you can sit down and listen to an interview with Jeff Wilson for an hour. Like, all I got to do was look the guy up in the rich list, this little paragraph once a year in a BRW rich list. That's all I got to learn from somebody. You can just sit down and listen to Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos about business, and you can invest in assets like Bitcoin's been CAGRing at 40 or 50% a year for the last 5 years. Sit down and work out what your savings turn into when you're getting double-digit compounding every year. It's nuts, like, where you can go. So don't short sell yourself by not understanding the basic math here. I mean, in our life, I look at you, Jeff, and you're saying you didn't understand markets, you didn't understand this, you didn't understand that, but look what you built. Like, because you live in Australia, you live in a country where you can become wealthy and you can do great things. And I want Australians to really understand and believe that. And this is just going to disincentivize all the right actions, in my view.
It's that time of year again at Unemployable, where we're opening up our Unemployable Business Coaching Program. It's over a 12-month period. And with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You could get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au/coaching and register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
Yeah, and if you want to go back, I know you said at the start, Adam, yeah, sort of 27 years ago, I set up Wilson Asset Management. That's the fund management business. And I had someone that was prepared to put some money in with me. And when I started, they said, how much money can you put in? And this is 27 years ago. I'd bought my house and I'd actually paid that off. So I put every dollar I had in the world in there, and that was $500,000. And that was it. And that was 27 years ago. Unfortunately, the business has grown, but also, the compounding effect of, growing at more than, 3 or 4%, investing, when you can grow, as Warren Buffett talks about, the snowballing effect, which is significant.
So your exposure into that fund, just to get young people thinking, like you manage funds for all kinds of people in that $6 billion, right? So it's not all your money, just for people who aren't familiar with this. But let's say that 500 grand that you put in 27 years ago, what would that be worth today? Your units in the fund, for example, ballpark.
No, I'm not sure of the figure, but like we've averaged in that fund, we've averaged about 16% per annum.
Right.
That's right. Are you doing the numbers?
I'm doing it quickly because I'm putting in here. If you put in $500,000 and compound at 16% for 27 years, what's it worth, right? Yeah. And so this will blow people's minds, because if you're a young person and you put your money with a guy like Jeff, he'll charge you a few points for managing it. But if you're patient and you've got a low time preference, if you read the Bitcoin standard, that's one of the core principles. Have a low time preference. Be patient.
Yes.
Here's the math. $20.5 million is what that $500,000 grows to. So $500,000 over 27 years, wisely and competently managed, does wonders. Well done.
But the interesting thing is, I remember my daughter who's, in her early 30s now, but... I went over to, she lives in New York, and I went over to one of the Buffett fests the Berkshire AGM, and I went by New York, and when I was there, this is 5 or 6 years ago, she said, hey, what are you coming over here to see? Some guy who invests. And I went back, this was, when did he start, in the 60s?
Yeah,
something like that, and I think like he started with not a big amount of money in the fund. It could have been
It was tiny.
Yeah, it could have been 100 grand, or could have been 200 grand, and I think then it might have been worth 60 billion or so. Like in theory, it's the compounding effect. Like you did it for 27 years. If you did it, all the young people, and this is like if I could have my time again. Yeah, I would invest significantly more of my money, and I'd invest it in markets that I'd spend a lot more time doing analysis and looking for ways of investing it. Yeah, whether it's in crypto or Bitcoin. Yeah, learning mistakes. Yeah, whether it's investing in the stock market. Yeah, so it would grow it. The markets do about 10% per annum, so that's sort of the worst case scenario. But if you spend time doing it, you're going to do better than that. And then really it's in the it's in the 20th or the 30th or the 40th or the 50th year. Yeah, the multiplier effect or the compounding effect is phenomenal. And that's they talk, it was Einstein, talks about, the eighth wonder of the world is compounding. And now, like, I know we shouldn't probably, this isn't political. this discussion. But one of the frustrating things is the Anthony Albanese. He's responsible for this new tax potentially coming in. Let's assume it does, but he's in a different situation, so he gets a different different set of rules where he gets the benefit of compounding, and he doesn't pay tax each year that we will on the theoretical change in the value of our investments. He gets an adjustment when he retires, so he gets all the benefit of compounding. They say, "Oh, look, he'll be charged an interest rate," but I'm sure it's unfortunately, I think it's skewed in his favour.
I saw a speaker on stage last week in Prague, and he said, "What's the biggest purchase that you'll make in your life?" And everybody said, "Yeah, your house." And he said, "You're wrong. It's the government. It's the government that you vote for, because you'll spend more money on the policies of that government than you will on anything else." And so this is why, for young people listening to this who are not politically active, who just think it's never going to matter what their vote is, it matters. Because what Jeff's talking to us about here, guys, really need to pay attention. This is one of Australia's most successful people from a money point of view. The points make a difference. The difference between a 10% return and a 16% return compounded over 40 years is millions of dollars on almost any reasonable nest egg that you start with. And if you have a government that is bringing in policies that trim away those 2, 3, 4, 5% through tax and other things, it really matters. And you're talking about the economic future of yourself, your kids, and their kids. And so it really does matter. But you're right. There's something really broken when the people making the decisions are not bound by the same rules. And I think that's really not great. Both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, and let's hope. I mean, yeah, he's a politician, and that's sort of how the cards have fallen. Jim Chalmers, the treasurer, he's going to have a talk fest in August about trying to improve productivity in Australia, and also looking at the tax system. And the tax system does need some enormous significant work. Because it does benefit. Superannuation does benefit older people that have already got money in there. And unfortunately, with this failure index, as you sort of said, Adam, it really impacts the 30 to 40 year olds. They're the ones that are going to have to pay. That they'll be paying the higher taxes, and you guys won't get the benefit that I got, and that's not fair, and that has to be adjusted. So, but let's hope, that does occur.
I find that fascinating. I think they've just done this terrific job of villainizing those people who are pretty much ready to take their money out anyway, and people have voted against their own self interest. But I guess it's understanding that just got missed. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm in an echo chamber, but I was shocked when it was such an overwhelming vote for those policies. I just didn't see the upside for people, but that's what we voted for. And
I think the tax on unrealized gains, no one, like, it had been blocked twice.
Yes.
And the second time, what governments do when they try to get legislation through, they put something really good with something bad. And before the election, to try to get this through, and this is what worries me about, like, how desperate was the government to get it through, is they put it with the legislation, which removes those really annoying charges on your credit card. They put it together with legislation that removes that. And if I was Pocock and Lambie, I actually would have would have been inclined to nearly vote for it just to get rid of those things. But they stood their ground, which good on them. and they voted against it. So even though they're trying to be bribed, you know, they stood up for it. So everyone thought, oh, look, it's not going to happen. And then surprisingly, like the frustration that the coalition or, you know, didn't really come up with any strong policies against Labor, that, you know, Labor won and won by a lot more than everyone anticipated. And now they sort of argue they've got a mandate to do this. Yeah, you know, I don't think that's the case at all, because no one expected to come in. And since the election, you know, like there's been a lot of discussion about this in the various newspapers. And, well, hence, yeah, I mean, you doing your YouTube clip, that's how we're talking today.
Why do you think the Australian government right now is so aggressive after taxes? Like, the OECD came out this week and said Australia has now taken second place as the most taxed country in the OECD and quickly closing in now on first place as the most highly taxed country in the group. Do you have any thoughts on that? Like, why is it getting so aggressive? Why are we there? Like, when I interviewed John Howard, he said, you know, like, we're such a lucky country with our resources. Do you feel like we're managing things poorly? Like, what's your take from where you sit?
Yeah, 100% managed poorly. Like, you know, when we nearly had the resources tax,
mm-hmm.
I was for the resources tax.
Mm.
To me, unfortunately, the resource companies, they put a lot of money together and then they sort of bullied the government.
Yes.
Out of it, which is, unfortunately is a cost to all Australians. I think one of the frustrations is that we really haven't had a government, whether it's a Liberal government or, a coalition or a Labor government, that's really been able to stand up and make hard decisions.
I agree.
And hard decisions have to be made.
You look at Victoria, we need the debt that they're in now because of infrastructure blowouts and unions running the show. We need a leader that can stand up and say, enough's enough. It's the Australian people that are paying for this. And we hear it all the time in the comments. People are seriously pissed off that we are not seeing the wealth to the people from our resources. And we are deeply in debt because nobody's wrangling in the unions in part.
And unfortunately, we've had the immigration situation.
What are your thoughts on that? I know it's a big subject, but what are your thoughts?
To me, like, we used to run it. The bizarre thing is, in the old days, we used to run at 100, like, if it was Labor, it would be 130,000 or maybe 110,000 people would come in a year. If it was the Liberals, they'd push it a bit harder, it'd be 150,000 would come in each year. So
why is it blown out?
Well, to me, it's, again, I'm not sure. Like, you tend to have to go to conspiracy theories, don't you?
You've got to be careful, mate, because they're conspiracy theories till they all come true.
I know. It's the scary thing is, yeah. Like,
you,
to me,
I mean, what do you think it is? Like, do you want to say anything about that? Or
I'd prefer not to.
To me, I got a sense you'd rather stay Switzerland on that one.
Well, yeah. To me, it's I know there was a bit of catch up after COVID.
Yeah.
But we should have just done the catch up, and I know we need certain skills, and we've always imported skills. So to me, that's good as well. One of the frustrating things is, so what we do is, I know. Yeah, we're talking about Bitcoin Bitcoin, you've got to understand supply demand, you've got to understand markets, you've got to understand volatility. What I do is, the business I'm involved in is we invest in companies. So, we buy shares in companies that are listed on the stock market. Yeah, when we do that, we're effectively backing the person that's managing that company. We say, look, we become a part owner of that company when we buy a share. So if the person managing it does a good job, we make money. If they do a bad job, we lose money broadly, over time. And so, yeah, to me, that's what I'm looking for. And we spend an enormous amount of time effectively backing people, you know, backing the CEO of the company.
Are they anywhere, Jeff, or just Australian companies or global?
No, we do global as well. Yeah, you know, we've got Australian funds and global funds, but in terms of looking at any company, yeah, you know, whether it's any company in the world, you're really backing the CEO. And so if I look at Australia, yeah, you look at Australia as a company effectively, then you're backing the CEO, you're backing the Prime Minister. Now, the tough thing is, yeah, would I invest in this company? I actually wouldn't, because I just don't think they've been making the right decisions. You know, you talked about, yeah, all the growth has been effectively board growth in terms of employing people in the public service. Yeah, they're not actually creating an environment. And this is, yeah, particularly, yeah, this tax on unrealized gains is a sort of another nail in the coffin of that entrepreneurial aspirational environment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you actually, and let's hope that in August, yeah, and I don't give too much hope, but let's hope that the tax changes effectively redistribute you know, the tax burden off younger people and to the to the boomers and also encourage people to work, encourage people to take risk, and encourage people to invest. The tough thing is I can't see how you can go to sit down with sort of have a round table to try to work out this strategy on tax and productivity where the government, before they get to that, the Treasurer is saying, look, we're going to bring in this tax, which is, sort of discourages everyone from taking risk. That's the bizarre thing.
I mean, as a guy that spends his days talking to entrepreneurs and backing entrepreneurs and CEOs, in a world that's ever increasingly digital, when the emergence of AI, like if your kids were saying, Dad, I want to start in business, I can be anywhere, would you encourage them to start in Australia still and create their wealth here? And if no, why not? If they can be in London, or if they can be in Dubai, or they can be in some other part of the world.
In the last couple of weeks, I would initially, I'd say, my thought would be Australia. Yeah, it is a fantastic place to live. Yeah, frustratingly, in the last couple of weeks, I know one player that's very big in Bitcoin has moved to, or is in the process of moving to New Zealand because of the tax environment there. And a university professor, highly intelligent person that trades a lot, is actually moving to Dubai because there's no capital gains tax. So, unfortunately, I think Australia mightn't be the best place if you wanted to, to invest. As a young person, of course you've got to weigh everything up. Yeah, you know, lifestyle, quality of life, and making money. And it's not all about making money. It's, you know, you really can't beat the quality of life in Australia, but maybe there's a period of time where you have to go and work overseas, you know, which encourages you to, you know, be entrepreneurial, invest and aspire.
Just to get that capital ball rolling, you know, just to get your first bit up, you know, and then let compounding do its thing. Jeff, I know that you've got lots to do, and you've joined us a little bit later than you probably would normally be doing these kind of interviews. But I don't want to hold you up any longer. But is there anything else you want to say on this matter? Because the floor is yours. We're going to slice some clips out of this and hopefully get some virality for it. But what message would you? I get the sense that you've got a big business. You don't want to be politically partial. I get it. But what message would you like to send out there to no matter which politician's listening to either side of this aisle?
Yeah. To me, like the most important thing, yeah, for every Australian is to be able to have a fair go, to be able to invest your capital and to have aspirations. And any politician that's making the rules has to create an environment, particularly for the young people. So they're the ones that I'm in the latter part of my life. It's the younger people that are going to make us make Australia a really great, exciting place, and then create an environment that allows them to do that. And unfortunately, taxing a profit, an unrealized gain, a profit that you may never make, a pretend profit, is not it.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for your input, your willingness to come on our little show and share your wisdom. We really do appreciate it. We love having experienced voices. If you've got any of your mates that feel similar and want to have their thoughts amplified, please send them our way. We'd love to capture the wisdom of the Australians that have lived and done stuff in their life. So appreciate you, mate. Thank you.
Great, Adam. And thank you very much for your interest. And as I'm in the latter part of my my life, I've only sort of I think COVID sort of pushed me into the technology world. Otherwise, if the printer, well, I suppose you guys don't even talk about printers, but if the printer needed ink, I used to drive up to Officeworks and buy it before COVID, and at least it forced me online to start getting things delivered. And to me, the fascinating thing, probably a year and a bit ago, I think social media wasn't a big thing from my perspective. I joined Facebook really early because I was doing a course and a number of people were on it. And I think I've got 32 friends. So it really hasn't. And I think I've been there for 15 odd years. But when I was in the US, I caught up with Bill Ackman, and he persuaded me to go on Twitter. So about a year ago, I started tweeting, and then I was talking to someone in Australia, about this tax on unrealized gains, and they said, look, you got to go on LinkedIn, and I'd sort of held off LinkedIn for 21 years. It's been going, and I could have joined years ago, but I never wanted to allow people to know too much about me. I think in the last month I've joined LinkedIn, so I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I get to TikTok. I know you said at the very start. I've been observing what happens on TikTok, and people have talked about unrealized gains on TikTok, but I haven't been game enough to go there yet.
I must have misheard you. You were saying you watch TikTok, so I thought you were saying you were on TikTok, and I was like, hats off to you, mate. Like, having a crack. I love it. How can people follow your tweets? Like, what's your X handle? Is it at Jeff Wilson?
I tried Jeff Wilson. Unfortunately, there's too many Jeff Wilson, so I had to put – I did Jeff Wilson 888, and then I told someone I did that, and they said, no, don't do that. And so then I changed it to Jeff Wilson. That's with a G, G-O-F-F, Wilson. And then I put WAM, W-A-M. That's as in Wilson Asset Management. So
okay, Jeff Wilson WAM. Okay, there you go. Yeah, I think if you had Jeff Wilson 888, they'd look for a Chinese guy because it was the lucky number, right?
That's so, right.
Different thing. No, that's awesome. I will, guys. The takeaways here is share this out there, get this in the hands of people that you want to hear it. Get politically active because this stuff does impact you. Vote for the whichever side of the aisle is going to be responsible financially. Really appreciate it.
And with the petition, if people can sign the petition, it's an online petition because to me this hasn't been passed. This legislation, we've still got a month and a bit to go. I've had a couple of communications with the Greens. I get on really well with the Greens. They were very supportive in 23 about something that we were doing, and I've had really good conversations with them. They're big on indexing, and we're big on indexing as well. What I'm trying to do is get them over the line on stopping the tax on the unrealized gains, because I'm happy for the tax on realized gains, and I'm happy for the tax on bigger amounts in super to increase. So that's my real challenge. But if we can put pressure on the Labor politicians, yeah, maybe the ones in the marginal seats, and we've got some good data so far from people who signed the petition that they're not happy, then there can be some internal pressure. Now, if you all of a sudden, you're a politician, you've just got a new job because you've been voted in, and you think you're there for 6 or 9 years because you're going to stay voted in, if all of a sudden you think there's a bit of a backlash and maybe your job will disappear in 3 years' time, because of this tax, which is illogical, bad, criminal, theft, or stupid, then maybe you'll put pressure on your leaders to, hey, look, there's other ways of, let's tax realised gains rather than let's tax these make-believe profits that may never happen.
I want to observe something there, Jeff, like that is really, I think, very, very important in the world in which we now live. It would be so easy to look at a guy like you and go, oh, here we go, a wealthy, successful businessman. He's a Liberal voter. He's right-wing. And therefore, I hate him. Guys, he just said that he is working with the Greens. That's like, I don't think I've met anybody who's like in my echo chamber that is working with the Greens or likes the Greens. But here you are, very open-minded to getting the job done and not being convinced that you're right. The old saying, people don't look for information anymore. They look for confirmation. I really think there's a lot in that for all of us to go, hey, listen, put down being polarized for a minute and look to solve the problem. And if Jeff Wilson is willing to sit down and talk to anybody who's going to do the right thing, we should all be the same. I think this, we're just pushed to the edges now, and we're not willing to come to the middle. We're not willing to be just, it's like a wild idea to be conservative in the middle. It's just like people are either that way or that way.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the interesting thing is the Greens want to drop the cap from 3 million to 2 million. But they want to index it. So effectively, if it's indexed, then in 9 years' time, you're back at 3 million. And then all younger people, they get the benefit because they'll get the benefit of the indexing over time. Like my argument to the Greens was, hey, let's index it by the growth in asset prices so people hold on. But I just couldn't get them over the line there. But I'm 100% with them on indexing. And also they don't want to be debt in the super funds because it allows the super funds to buy property and gear up, and I've got no problem with that. I've got no problem with taking that out. The only thing I'm trying to convince them on is and actually we're in the process of doing a 26 page document that I'm going to give to them about the impact that all that money in super, the impact that if you tax unrealized gains, then you're going to take all that risk capital, the trillions of dollars off the table. So it's going to be negative for the young entrepreneurs, that need that money and need that risk capital to start up. And that's, if I can convince them of that, I'm sure I can convince them to hold out on stopping the other tax on unrealized gains. But that's my real challenge. And I'm not sure if I'll be successful.
Yeah, and tax our resources. Let's get some money coming into this country so that the average Aussie doesn't have the highest power bills in the world and all this ridiculousness. The average punter out there is just hurting so much at the moment, and it just shouldn't be that way, in my opinion. So anyway, there you have it, guys. Jeff Wilson, Wilson Asset Management. Follow him on Twitter. Jeff, thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. Catch you next time in the future. Cheers, mate.
Good man. Thanks, mate.
Thanks.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.